Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. And we have just had another Dom Bomb. This morning, Dominic Cummings took to Substack. This was his free Substack, not the one that you have to pay for access to offer a rebuttal of Matt Hancock's evidence recently to MPs, and also to share a few messages. I suppose, Isabel, to begin, I think the part of this that has been the most striking relates to what appeared to be WhatsApp messages between the Prime Minister and Dominic Cummings, in which among the mix, he says in relation to Matt Hancock or Matt Hancock's work that it is totally effing hopeless. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so these are, as you say, message exchanges between Dominic Cummings and the Prime Minister, and there are two. One is the effing useless message, totally effing useless. And then there's another message where the Prime Minister also calls Hancock useless again when he's talking to Dominic Cummings about this. And these are the sort of the most attention-grabbing, and I think probably almost the meatiest bits of this. I think it's 7,500 word blog and at current count 89 tweet thread that's been put up in response to the Select Committee's request for evidence to back up some of the things that Dominic Cummings told them last month. But crucially, there are quite a few things missing. So at the Select Committee evidence session, Cummings claimed that the Cabinet Secretary had said that he had lost faith in Hancock's ability to tell the truth. He also claimed that Hancock had said that people were being tested routinely as they were being discharged from hospitals into care homes. Now, apart from the totally effing useless messages, and apart from a reiteration by Cummings that they kept finding out that Hancock was saying one thing and doing something else, there isn't actually a note or a record of those conversations either with the Cabinet Secretary or with Matt Hancock, which I think makes it quite easy for Matt Hancock to say, well, you know, it's still telling that no evidence has been produced of this, and for the waters at least to have been muddied around the veracity of these allegations that Dominic Cummings is making. But as I'm sure we'll come on to in this podcast, I think there is still a political impact for Matt Hancock.
I must admit, I thought the message that grabbed my attention the most was when Boris Johnson actually talks about taking away various responsibilities from the Department of Health and Matt Hancock and giving them to Michael Gove. I actually think that's more damning than the useless quote, because the useless quote could be a kind of expression of rage at the whole situation, not at Hancock specifically, while as the proposal to take away from him and his department responsibility over various crucial bits of a pandemic and hand them to Michael Gove, I think is a more damning. I think in some ways Matt Hancock is fortunate that Dominic Cummings decided not to produce this evidence before Matt Hancock appeared before the Select Committee. I think it allows Matt Hancock to say, oh, you know, he didn't produce the evidence in time, and then the evidence isn't what he said he was. But I think what will cause a lot of nervousness in government is you have to imagine that there is plenty more where this came from. If Dominic Cummings has all the WhatsApp messages from his time in Downing Street, one wonders what else might be in there.
Isabel, what do you think the consequences are for Matt Hancock? Because when Dominic Cummings did the epic session previously, there were some saying, you know, well, these are really serious allegations, particularly ones on care homes. Can he cling on? And it turned out he didn't really need to cling on. He had wine with the Prime Minister, I think, that evening. And there was definitely a sense that Number 10 almost formed a protective ring around Matt Hancock because...
To borrow a phrase.
Yeah, exactly. Because Dominic Cummings was criticising Boris Johnson too. So does this move the dial at all?
Yeah, it was striking after that Cummings evidence session that a lot of Conservative MPs who I spoke to, who are by no means massive fans of Matt Hancock, felt that Cummings was fundamentally untrustworthy and weren't sort of taking his allegations particularly seriously with regards Matt Hancock. But I think there are two things here. One is that this glass of wine that Matt Hancock shared with the Prime Minister may well still be a poison chalice, because there was the suggestion again by Dominic Cummings that Hancock was being set up as the person who could be sacked when the inquiry concluded. Now, I'll tell you why I think that's bogus. It's because unless he's planning to have a sort of Jeremy Hunt-style tenure as health secretary, no minister lasts that long in a job to be there when a public inquiry concludes. I mean, generally, you know, the government's changed, people have moved on to new things, people have died. Inquiries take, you know, a decade to conclude. If you look at Chilcot, for instance, it took even longer and cost a lot of money to come up with its conclusions, to the extent that Tony Blair had, you know, his face had basically changed shape by the time he was actually responding to Chilcot after the Iraq War. And so I think that's a bogus argument. But what I think is really important is that in the next few weeks, Matt Hancock will be publishing a bill on NHS reform. And this bill basically hands a lot of power to the Secretary of State. And at his most politically weak, he will be in the Commons asking MPs to trust him to give him more power. And I'm not sure that that works particularly well for any health secretary. It doesn't work well for the Conservatives, because whenever the Conservatives try to do anything with the health service, it always goes back to first principles and an argument about whether they're secretly trying to hand it all over to Richard Branson and whether they still believe in crushing the health service. And don't forget, it's taken them a decade to do these reforms because of the mess of the last one. And there's no guarantee that these reforms are going to be any less messy or any less politically controversial. So while it, you know, may be the case or may not be the case that Hancock is surviving Dominic Cummings' allegations, will the legislation survive Matt Hancock? And will Matt Hancock stay long enough piloting this legislation to get what he ultimately wanted, which was more power, having felt frustrated by the power that NHS boss Simon Stevens has had during the pandemic and prior to that?
James, do you think Matt Hancock will be moved if we ever get that reshuffle?
Ask him if he thinks Hancock's useless.
James. James, I was going to ask you a nice question, but Fraser's whispering something. So do you think Matt Hancock's absolutely effing useless or just useless?
Matt Hancock has gone on the record today to tell Sky News he doesn't think he's useless.
I know what Matt Hancock thinks, but
I actually think that James Kirkup's blog on Coffee House has a point on this. I think it would be very bizarre, given the pressure that people in government were under at the time, if tempers hadn't flared and exploded at various moments in the crisis. I think any public inquiry will find that lots of mistakes were made. I think on care, I thought it was one of the most remarkable bits of Matt Hancock's evidence, actually, at the Health and Social Care Select Committee, was when he said that although there had been a Chinese article about asymptomatic spread of the disease in January, the department had assumed that that was a mistranslation. Which seems to me that is almost one of the most remarkable errors, because the failure to realise that unlike most flus, this was going to transmit asymptomatically is one of the things that led to the big care home problem. I think there's also, Isabel would know more about this than me, but I also think there was another problem, which was there was a broad desire throughout the NHS system to free up hospital beds by whatever means necessary. And I think that essentially meant that, and you saw this, and I think Stephen Bush makes a good point on this, which is if you look at the mistakes in common in the devolved nations, that actually tells you something quite interesting. And essentially everyone got care homes wrong. Everyone got clear people out of hospital beds. We need the hospital beds, send them back to the care homes. And I think that was clearly a mistake and an error. The debate between Matt Hancock and Dominic Cummings about the target, I think, is interesting. Which is, you know, this is a perennial debate in politics, which is, do targets distort, which is Dominic Cummings' argument, which was the desire to hit this 100,000 target with a big press conference at the end of it, meant that tests weren't being used in the way that they should have been, or are targets what push the system into action? I think that one of the interesting things with Dominic Cummings' blog is his insistence on the public inquiry sooner rather than later, because I think he says in his blog that he thinks that Boris Johnson is planning to go 2 years after the next election and so won't be in office when the public inquiry kind of gets around to the really meaty bit. I think this is going to become more of the political argument, though. I thought you saw something in Boris Johnson's political good fortune in that neither Keir Starmer, nor even more remarkably, did any Labour MP raise these allegations at PMQs.
Fraser is now walking over.
A philosophical point. We were discussing this. The magazine went to press at 1:30 today. I think the effing useless comment emerged at what time? I don't know, about an hour before. Emma Byrne, I hope she won't mind me saying so, the production editor, thinks that she had either written or thought of pretty much everybody as being effing useless in the previous 2 hours. And,
and since I wrote the cover story, I'm not sure how I'm meant to feel about that.
But I can understand
I'm bad
it.
Last night, so okay.
I mean, my wife called me useless this morning at the breakfast table. And you know, she had a point. I mean, people will say things, they'll send messages, they'll email. There's a massive trail. If you were to do a digital x-ray of what all of us say to and from each other. If you get
speak
people
for
who
yourself,
are...
Fraser. I mean, I have used the word useless quite a lot in the past 40 hours as I tried to reschedule my wedding.
Yeah, I know. You might order, you say, oh, Deliveroo, oh, they haven't given my lunch, they're absolutely effing useless. You didn't really mean it. It's a figure of speech. And I wonder that when these things first started coming out, you know, that this was a trend a few years ago where court cases, you'd subpoena somebody's emails, and then all of a sudden the embarrassing disclosure would be if somebody referred to a friend or a colleague using some pretty rude words. And I think that now people kind of see it. It's almost, it depends, if you work, as James says, a small group of people working together in a highly stressed situation, you use language like that, and it's... maybe not exactly like that, but a similar sentiment. So that's why, you know, I'm not sure it will be so damaging. And I looked at it, it was like something like the sixth most read story in our website. So I think it's almost losing its ability to shock. Because right now, in our WhatsApps, lots of people will have, you know, conversations which could be used to embarrass the friends which you had it with, especially, you know, conversations had weeks or months ago if you fall out with something. A whole generation of people has grown up knowing this. And I think it's losing its potency a little bit. But it doesn't make you think that just, you know, under the circumstances that the Prime Minister said that, I have to say that he would have had ample cause to say that, certainly about Gavin Williamson, the Education Secretary. So it's difficult to think at any time where any Prime Minister wouldn't have cause to say that about pretty much any of his or her cabinet colleagues. Nowadays, we just see it and it comes out a little bit more as a sign of our times, I think.
And Fraser, just while we have you here, you're with full staff members. Have you used that word about anyone here in messages?
My email,
just between us.
My email is full of superlative praise for you guys. It'd be embarrassing if I...
WhatsApp messages,
And Isabel, when it came to Prime Minister's questions, Ian Blackford did manage to raise the issue briefly. But what was the general picture coming from there? How did Boris Johnson appear?
Yeah, I mean, Keir Starmer was back on his sort of comfort territory at PMQs today because he was talking about competence and the Prime Minister taking too long to add India to the red list. And Starmer's allegation was that if he'd done it in time, then we wouldn't have the Delta variant here. We wouldn't be having to disappoint so many people by delaying Freedom Day for a little longer. And he did have some good turns of phrase. So he turned one of Boris Johnson's stock political attacks back on the Prime Minister, saying while the NHS was vaccinating, he was vacillating, which is something that Boris Johnson says quite often to Keir Starmer when he's calling him Captain Hindsight. So I think it was a better session for Keir Starmer than it was for Boris Johnson, because there are, as we've discussed on this podcast, a lot of questions about the delays in responding to the Indian, or now as it's known, Delta variant.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.